Hey guys, welcome back. Hey everybody.
Hello.
Hey, look, there's a different panel now.
Oh, finally Grace is back. Jeezy, crazy. Mister.
Well, I was here yesterday.
Oh, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I was at Disneyland buying the shirt I changed out of because it's not formal enough.
Fair.
Oh, okay.
We both changed out actually of our casual wear to be on the show with everyone this evening.
For our radio audience.
This is your formal wear.
Yeah, this is our, it's gonna be a bleak wedding, Anna, let me tell you. This is my formal wear.
Yeah, I took the hat off. I put like, there's goo in the bathroom for your hair, but it just sometimes will be a chunk. So there is a giant chunk of purple goo hidden down in the roots of my hair on this side.
Oh, fun.
It's creepy. Don't put your hand in there.
It's kind
of an
Easter egg for the viewers.
I was thinking ahead of time, should I change out of my shirt? Because Grace is in a shirt. In that time, I'm glad I did because you changed out of that t-shirt into an actual button down. So it worked out. I didn't want to leave you hanging because you always look so nice.
I know.
Really?
That's the yeah, you do. And it, honestly,
thanks.
Like you make us
so
all
nice.
Dress up and.
Oh, that sucks.
I know, it's awful.
By the way, when it comes to the should I dress fancy or casual debate, my favorite is John. Because John really wants to wear ties on the show. And I keep talking him out of it as much as possible. I think ties on our show just doesn't, it's weird.
You should have
a
rule.
You don't see them a lot. You don't see ties.
She should have a rule like
Sean.
At those restaurants. I don't. You should have the rule like at those restaurants where if you show up in a tie, they cut it off. And then you hang it on the wall. You know what I'm talking about? Like
I don't know where you go to eat.
In Arizona, their names are like Fancy Spurs, John Hookers. You know, and it's like no ties here. This is barbecue. And that's where they do it. You've never seen that?
No,
the comments will come in about that.
Sure. I haven't saw it. Anyway,
why do you miss John? This is the post game, by the way.
Those of you tuning in to the radio version of this show on satellite, Brett Ehrlich joins me and Grace Baldridge joins me. And we have an awesome hour ahead for you. Real quick, though, I do want to read a few TYT lives, two that I really loved. One was from Super Last Thing.
Such a great name.
So good.
So good.
So good.
Not jank, but this person has a great tweet. How pissed is that doctor and nurses that worked on him, meaning Representative Scalise, busted their asses and God sweeps up all the credit? Yeah, I mean, look, I caught that as well. And I didn't want to be like too critical about the whole religious thing because Scalise, you know, talked about praying to God and how God delivered and it was a miracle. Look, religious people, especially in times of desperation or, you know, in pretty devastating moments where you think you might lose your life, faith is what helps them. And so I have no hard feelings toward that whatsoever, even as an atheist. I do wish he would have thanked his doctors, but whatever. Don't you see I'm loco, says, but government healthcare is bad. They say it all the time. Yeah. It's funny, like those who get the government healthcare in Congress are always talking about how terrible universal healthcare would be, but they love that government coverage. Anyway, take it away, Grace.
Over to me. So it turns out that the Facebook group United Muslims of America was actually none of those things. In fact, a new report from the Daily Beast has traced it back to the Russian government. The account was just a front to reach American Muslims and their allies. Sources confirmed that the imposter account bought Facebook advertisements to reach its target audience. It promoted political rallies aimed at Muslim audiences, and it used the Twitter account Muslims in USA and the Instagram account Muslim Voice to pass along inflammatory memes under the cover of the UMA. The Twitter account has been suspended and the account on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, was shuttered at around the same time as the Facebook page. Now, these trolls actually ran this account simultaneously along with other accounts that were spewing Islamophobic messages to right-wing audiences on Facebook. So very busy trolls. And of course, this was used to influence the US voting public. The Real UMA is a California-based nonprofit that promotes interfaith dialogue and political participation through its over 30 years old. It's currently non-functional. So that was sort of why some people believed that this Facebook group was credible, because you could look them up online and they had some sort of basis. In fact, they had even had organizational meetings, including Congressman Democrat Andre Carson, who spoke out about this, saying, unfortunately, it appears that the United Muslims of America is one of many organizations that was unfairly targeted by Russia in their attempt to influence the 2016 presidential election. This was a pretty sizable Facebook group as well. The Facebook group accumulated almost 300 300,000 Facebook followers. And all they did with this was to spew some fake news, which I don't want to perpetuate here, but it was all fake. It was all sort of bullshit. And now the conversation has turned a little bit to who should we be holding responsible? What is Facebook's culpability in this group being able to perpetuate these falsehoods? So 2 weeks ago, it refused to commit to an expanded public explanation, even as legislators investigating Russian interference in the election showed great interest in public testimony. That position eroded further last week when founder Mark Zuckerberg committed to sharing the ads themselves with Congress rather than the descriptions of them they may have thus far provided lawmakers. The executive director of the civil rights group Muslim Advocates says Facebook has a responsibility to be part of the solution, especially when their platform is being used to sow misinformation, hate, and division. It is insufficient for them to notify Congress and walk away. So there is a lot to break down here. Where do you guys fall in this conversation with Facebook's responsibility?
Well, I want to elaborate a little further on, you know, the sophistication of this page.
Oh,
and the trolls behind it, because it's not as easy as finding a page that looks like a little suspicious and then shutting it down. Because what they really did was the vast majority of posts that they put up there were legitimate posts, right? And they weren't divisive in any way. They weren't suspicious in any way. And that was how this page built its credibility among its followers. And then all of a sudden, when you would least expect it, boom, here is a, you know, here's a fake news story that's so outrageous. You know, the US government is funding ISIS.
Right.
It was an example of that. Specific politicians are working with ISIS. Just things that had absolutely no evidence, no proof whatsoever. But if the page is building credibility among its followers, then, you know, something like that wouldn't seem as suspicious, or at least it wouldn't raise as many red flags as it would if it was just a page that's pushing out all these like nonsense conspiracy theories.
It's terrible what they're doing. It's terrible, but I mean, it's a good job of being terrible. You know, at a certain point, you're like, when you watch The Americans, you're like, you guys lived a very regular life, except for the part where you're spying for the Russian government. The amount of discipline it takes, the extra work, as you say, to set up all these things that make it seem real. Like, it is textbook spycraft on a digital textbook, essentially. Mm-hmm. It is all those things where you just make people get lulled into this sense. And it kind of makes you feel bad for like the basic ass names of all the organizations that happen in America. Mm-hmm. Like the United Muslim Front of people who are nice. And it's crazy that they were able to get the names. Like the Russian group was able to get it. And then the actual group, United Muslims of America, had to get facebook.com/United Muslims of America UMA.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, they, again, these trolls, these Russian trolls posed as, they were imposters. And while they were running this page, they were also simultaneously running other pages that would fearmonger about the Muslim community. And so this was all meant to add to the division in the country and also to lead to a certain level of chaos and misinformation that would make it difficult for the average American who might not follow politics as closely to make an informed decision in the past election.
And even the average American that might follow politics closely, they could do a Google search and this would pass the smell test. It'd be like, oh, this is a legitimate organization. Why wouldn't this be their Facebook page? Especially when you get to a certain level of followers, I think as well, most people sort of believe that other people will have done the research.
Right.
It's like, oh, if 100,000 people are following this page, I bet one of them has looked this up or a couple of them will look this up. So it's probably credible. And that's how they got to nearly 300,000 followers.
That's
of people
right.
that were probably sharing their memes. Memes are very shareworthy and popular on Facebook. And there were a lot of people perpetuating and following through on this false narrative.
Yeah, and I think another potential solution, and I think the solution needs to be comprehensive, meaning that there's a number of different factors to take into consideration. But one thing that I think we need to really consider is the way legitimate journalists do their jobs. And what I mean by that is there are stories that are incredibly complex, nuanced, and not black or white. And the way that the media covers certain stories is not nuanced, does not go into specific details, treats every story as if it's black or white. You know, you're either on one team or the other team. And when you do that, and when you don't break it down with evidence and facts, well, that leads to an uninformed public, right? And the reason why I bring that up is because you need Americans to be as informed as possible. So when they do find themselves confronted with like ridiculous conspiracy theories, they're less prone to believe it. There's a reason why someone as maniacal and crazy as Alex Jones has a fan base, right? Like it blows my mind, but I mean, if you're being fed superficial, lackluster coverage of really complex issues, I think you're just more prone to falling for these crazy conspiracy theories.
There's a temptation to just put a lot of luster on good reporting, and it flies in the face of a tradition of good reporting being quite non-lustrous.
Yeah.
Being very bland, and everyone will say, like, you know what you should watch is 60 Minutes. And you should. You should absolutely watch 60 Minutes. It's some of the best investigative reporting. And then there's that school of thought that's like, you should watch Vice. And then Vice is like really shiny, and it's gotten better, believe me.
Yeah.
But I still think too frequently that is taking an idiot and having them interview an asshole, and that's your segment.
Well, yeah.
Like, I think we need, it's tough because the we need to get better at investigating stuff, but it is putting a lot of responsibility on the average American to really look at the process by which they verify information. And I don't think it's too much to ask, but really, I mean, the Russians who identified this early developed a strategy to exploit it and did it so successfully. Like, it reminds me of whenever there is a speech after you lose a game and your coach takes you aside and goes, listen, they had a really good game plan, but we also played like crap.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like. I feel like the Russians have a really great game plan with this.
Yes.
I think when you look at the amount that they spent on Facebook ads compared to the overall political spend, it's a small amount. But I think if we're reevaluating where we are as a country in terms of being susceptible to this kind of movement, then we just need to up our game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree. And this isn't just, you know, a criticism of other news organizations. This is also a moment of self-reflection for someone like me. You know, Brett and I were talking about it earlier, and it's like, what can we do to improve the way we do our job? The way that we report the news, the way we, you know, get the information out there. Do we do these stories justice? Are we detailed enough? These are all things that are constantly, you know, circulating in my mind because I want to make sure that, you know, we do right by our audience and, you know, future viewers who might come across some of our content. It's so important now more than ever. And, you know, the way, you know, print journalism has devolved is also a little concerning. You know, three paragraphs on one of the most complex issues and they're done. They're done, right?
Right.
And it's because they're churning out 15 articles a day. And so, look, not to call out Mediaite, I mean, it's just the first publication that comes to mind. But like they'll do the most superficial coverage of everything. And I'm like, what's the context of this story?
Pop Trigger's the same way. I don't do any research. I'm just kidding.
Okay. Well, and Pop Trigger's, you know, pop culture. So it's a little bit of a different animal. But
yeah, sorry to derail it. But there's also this dynamic at work where, and this is just my feeling, my read of the land, is that people already know what they want to believe. And all you're looking for is like a stat or a headline, just a little info pellet that you can put into your crappy little BB gun and fire off at people during arguments.
That'll reinforce your preconceived notions.
Yeah.
Which is why, as painful as it is, you know, one thing that I've been more, I guess more open to doing, and I do it every day, is listening to conservative shows and conservative commentators. And I do it because every once in a while, there's a point that someone makes that makes me think, oh, I hadn't considered that. Let me investigate it, right? Because I don't want to be stuck in any type of ideological bubble. And I think we as Americans are more prone to doing that now more than ever. And
yeah,
so
and
just be
important.
Open to the other side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No.
That was a long
thing. That was a good talk, guys.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's move on to the next story. So as of now, there is an online petition with about 61,000 signatures, and all of that is to remove a statue of former NFL player Ray Lewis after he knelt at an NFL game. He is a former Baltimore Raven. So here's what's happening. The petition on change.org was started by Eric Monmiodis of Hydes. He wrote, to kneel during the national anthem is disrespectful, regardless of what you are protesting. I will not stand for that kind of disrespect towards our country, especially from from a legend such as Ray Lewis. But the plot sort of thickens because Ray Lewis says, hey, I was kneeling, but I wasn't protesting. This is what he said. He said on Inside the NFL that he went down on both knees to simply honor God in the midst of chaos. Lewis told 105.7, I'm not in the protesting business. So he's saying that he was praying. He wasn't protesting. That's what was going down. And the plot thickens even further because according to the Baltimore Sun, extra security has been added near the Lewis statue to prevent anything happening to it.
What the hell? What is going on?
What the hell is happening?
So this is going to come off as incredibly aggressive, but it must be said. For the military members that are offended by someone simply kneeling during the national anthem, it's like, do you call liberals snowflakes? I'm just asking, right? Because like, do we spend hundreds of billions of dollars on the military every year so no one ever offends you or hurts your feelings? And why does it hurt your feeling when someone is practicing their First Amendment right in literally the mildest way imaginable? They don't like it when, you know, people take to the streets to protest. They don't like it when someone's peacefully protesting, you know, kneeling during the national anthem. Like, let's just, can we move on? It's a form of expression that's protected by the Constitution. Now, obviously, this guy who has this petition is, you know, a private citizen. It's not the government taking action against Ray Lewis. But by the way, Ray Lewis, really? You were praying? I mean, sure. Maybe.
Yes, I believe that Ray Lewis would say I was praying. Like, knowledge of Ray Lewis as a media figure, yes, he absolutely said, I was actually praying. Like, he gets really intense.
He's very intense.
And didn't he kill a guy? Like, anyone?
Well, I believe.
Obstruction of justice claimed around two murders. Like, that's the thing about Ray.
He pled guilty to an obstruction of justice charge in a case involving two murders.
But he said, I'm sorry, and he found the Lord. Like, I believe, like, that is Ray Lewis. Like, I found God,
but
and
do
I'm
you
back.
Believe that he was actually yes. praying? Or was it an excuse to kind of like.
I believe that Ray Lewis was praying. Yes.
Okay.
Like, it's not important whether I believe it or not to get, I think, to your point. Like,
yeah.
But, like, I believe Ray Lewis was like, I was just there to fix everything because I'm Ray Lewis. Like, as someone who watches football and follows the game and sees Ray Lewis on the sideline and doing his like, media appearances. But I just like how crazy, like, part Mobius strip, part M.C. Escher painting this is all turned into, where it's like, there's the initial protesters and people protesting the protesters. But am I protesting? But I'm not protesting people who are kneeling. I'm rather kneeling to protest people who are upset about protesting.
This is honestly the most ridiculous. Okay. And it's, come on. Isn't it kind of interesting that they're fighting to have a statue taken down because they didn't like someone practicing their First Amendment rights?
I don't doubt that that is exactly there. Just as aware of how ironic that is, and they're using that.
Your government is sending soldiers to preemptive wars and risking their lives, okay? US soldiers, US military members are dying so private contractors can get rich. That is offensive, okay? You wanna sign a petition, sign that petition. You care about our soldiers? That's what you should care about, right? Instead, you're twiddling your thumbs and getting petitions out there over Ray Lewis kneeling during an NFL game. Get your priorities straight, okay? Mm-hmm. I get it, it offends you. And if it offends you, that's fine. But you getting offended is not something that's protected by the Constitution, okay? But one thing that you should do and be concerned about is the fact that our leaders, both Democrats and Republicans, this is not an ideological thing, continuously support war efforts that put our soldiers in harm's way. And they sell you this BS about spreading democracy, but they don't care about democracy. They escalate wars in other countries simply because private contractors stand to make millions of dollars. Okay, that is offensive. That's what infuriates me. Mm-hmm. I actually care about our soldiers. I want to do something to ensure that we're not risking their lives so others can make money off of them. But hey, you know what? We're distracted by the NFL, so let's focus on that.
Yeah, I watched football with someone who just like has canceled their football subscription. And they were at an event where the football was on. It wasn't like they came to like get around this boycott. Like, they came because they wanted to be there, but football was on. And it was like, I believe that this person is angry at football players because this person loves America. What I can't wrap my mind around is how you can't just go read, you know, the one of the original kneelers, the guy who knelt with Colin Kaepernick. You can't just go read his column in the New York Times where he says exactly why he learned he shouldn't be sitting. Instead, he talked to a Green Beret and said, what's the most respectful way I can, you know, essentially present myself at half mast the way we put the flag itself at half mast when there's a national tragedy, because I think there's a national tragedy that needs to have some kind of attention brought to it. And he lays out the entire reason and how he consulted with people and didn't want to be offensive. So at that point, and this was said on SportsCenter by Scott Van Pelt, like, if you're mad at that, if you're mad at the Cowboys who knelt before the national anthem, and this is Scott Van Pelt saying, you just want to be mad. And that's it. And if you can look at yourself in the mirror and say to yourself, I'm not mad about something else, then we can have the next part of the conversation. But as more time passes, as we have a longer dialogue, as we see like the president re-escalate this thing that was almost a non-issue again.
And we're seeing that too from Ray Lewis as well, because he wasn't participating in either side, but yet he becomes a news story because he's sort of pussyfooting around where he wants to land on this issue. And I think you make an excellent point, Brett, that we need to remember why players started kneeling in the first place and how this began. Not the distraction that Donald Trump has turned it out to be on Twitter. And I think more and more we move away from that. And this is an example of that, of Ray Lewis saying, oh, I wasn't protesting. I'm not in the protesting business. I was praying. Like, then shut the fuck up. Don't go. Don't do anything. Pray. Right. You can pray any other time in the game that you want. But during the national anthem, a lot of NFL players are making a stand. So either kneel with them or don't. No one asked you to pray then.
And I just, well, by the way, we got to go to break. But I really want to get this one last point out. Just the intellectual dishonesty by people on the right when it comes to this issue, right? The same people who claim that they are in favor of free speech, they will fight for free speech, are the same people in their little YouTube shows that talk about, oh, we can't have politics in football. No politics in football. Oh, what happened? I thought that you were, you know, an advocate for free speech. Apparently, you don't like this particular type of speech, so you're going to go ahead and condemn it because you don't want politics and entertainment, right? And then also people like Tommy Lauren, I hate bringing her up. She does things for attention, it's clear. But think about the dishonesty of someone like Tommy Lauren, who's been so critical of these players. What did she say when she was on The View and supported reproductive rights? I believe in the Constitution. I'm a constitutionalist. Oh, really? You're a constitutionalist? Then why don't you value the First Amendment, which is exactly what these players are exercising when they kneel during the national anthem? But you don't like that type of speech. So Constitution doesn't matter when it comes to something that questions your ideology or questions your values. So it's just, it's frustrating, and it just shows you the hypocrisy on that issue. And by the way, when it comes to free speech, I'm gonna go ahead and say that we've been incredibly consistent, okay? Ann Coulter wants to go speak at Berkeley, do you, boo? And Ben Shapiro, do you, boo? Any person who wants to go speak at Berkeley, as long as you're not inciting violence, which is not protected by the First Amendment, do you. I will support you even if I disagree with your ideology. But they will never turn around and be consistent when it comes to someone on the left or someone with a different ideology practicing their First Amendment right. All right, we gotta take a break. Come right back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. I have a few TYT lives for you that I would like to read. So Music Lover says, loving today's first and second hour cast.
Yes. Check mark for me, check plus for you. Check plus for you.
Thank you.
I wanna do like, I don't know, Justin Bieber stories for the rest of the hour.
I would be fine with that.
Nope.
You got the experts right here.
She's been in his homeland.
Oh yeah, I was in
Canada.
I was in Canada.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Haven't we all been to Canada?
No. By the way, if you guys missed the post game yesterday, you are missing out. Ben and Grace were on, and Grace.
We talked about love.
We talked about love. Grace revealed some tidbits about her life.
Tidbits.
Tidbits. Yes. Jack McInally.
McInally,
sorry.
Sure.
Says, if we're honest, the fake news pages don't really work without a large dose of confirmation bias, which goes to Brett's point. And yeah, we need to all be aware of that. We all suffer from confirmation bias, and we got to get out of our comfort zone and, you know, try to consider the other side, because it might be legitimate, and you don't want to keep regurgitating, you know, half truths or mistruths, whatever it is. So anyway, God, our audience is so smart.
Or Mr. Truth.
I know, that's such
They're
a good point.
So smart. Okay.
All right. So I have some exciting news from the world of science. Scientists may have found a way to diagnose chronic traumatic encephalopathy, say that three times fast, in athletes while they are still alive. So as of now, you can only make a CTE diagnosis post-mortem. CTE is the degenerative brain disease that afflicts many professional football players and other athletes who have sustained repeated blows to the head. Now, there is a breakthrough, potentially. Researchers from Boston University School of Medicine have identified an inflammatory protein circulating in spinal fluid that may reflect the presence of CTE in patients' brains. The telltale protein called CLL11 appears likely to make its way into the bloodstream, where it might readily reveal the presence of a degenerative process akin to premature aging in the brain. Now, the lead researcher is Dr. Anne McGee, who is also a co-author of a study published on Tuesday in the journal PLOS-1. She is directing Boston University's Medical School's Chronic Traumatic Encephalopathy Center, which recently revealed it found evidence of the degenerative disorder in 110 of 111 professional football players who donated their brains to the program upon their death. So just take in that number, 110 out of 111. This is major. Among other objectives, researchers will need to demonstrate that the protein they've zeroed in on is a reliable sign of CTE and that it can distinguish CTE from other degenerative brain diseases. And they must understand more precisely how levels of CLL11 that can be measured in the bloodstream reflect those present in the brain. The new study also found that CLL11 levels in the prefrontal brain regions of football players rose as a function of more years spent on the gridiron. In the brains of former pro football players who played longest, levels of the protein were generally higher than levels in the brains of players with fewer years on the field. So we're seeing a pretty strong correlation already, but there's still a lot of research left to be done. This is what she said in her closing remarks. It's looking more and more likely that the tiny vessels that carry oxygen to the brain's farthest recesses become leaky and compromised. So looking for the downstream effects of such leakiness seemed like a promising tell for CTE. But there are still a ways to go. Brett, I know that you are a big football fan.
Yes, that is
so
true.
So I was wondering when I was reading this through, if this study proves true, if they are able to confirm this, which it looks like they're on their way to do, what would this mean for the NFL? How do you think the NFL would respond to this sort of scientific data?
So the NFL has a long legacy of not really responding to scientific data,
yep,
and having there be a long gap between when everyone's kind of like, hey, we should look deeper into this. Mm-hmm. The long amount of time it took to have the official concussion study revealed versus also to have it actually carried out. I just hope that people aren't just solely waiting for the NFL to take the lead on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems when you see numbers like 110 of 111 former players' brains were affected by it. Now, bear in mind that was not a random sample. That was people who had been playing in the NFL, who had submitted, whose families and whatnot had submitted the brains to be inspected. But there's also a large occurrence within people who were playing in college, kids who played at a much younger age. So all of the arrows seem to be pointing in this direction. Things I think that the NFL can continue to do, I mean, as much as people say that it's ruining the sport, I think making the rules such that you're not getting hit in the head as repeatedly as possible. This year they invented another new helmet.
But yeah, isn't that the point of the game? Like, isn't that what they do? They just run into each other with their heads?
They do not. They do not just run into each other.
By the way, I don't watch football at all. So
I mean, it's actually,
what it appears to be.
It's gotten difficult at times to watch football. I watched the Stanford UCLA game, or I think it was, when there were three calls in a row of what's called targeting, where you hit the guy in the head. And when you watch it, and
that's what I'm saying.
So it's illegal. It's now illegal. They want you to
hit. You don't get points for it.
And no one really understands the rule right now is the problem. Because the natural feel, what they tell you to do is hit him low. Don't lead with the crown of your helmet. Pull your head back and hit with your chest so that you're not just hitting each other in the head. However, there seems to be an instinct when you're running down the sidelines. Granted, I am a fan of football, but never played football, much to my father's disappointment, but not really. They lower their head right before impact, and it creates these incidents where no one really meant to do it, but it's hard to, you know, legislate it on the field.
So why do they lower their head? Is it just, you know, just the habit? Is it instinct?
Like, well, they're changing the rules now, so they have to reteach it for a lot of people. And then also, like, what you would do if you have a helmet. I mean, it's a lot of these guys like brace for impact.
Yeah.
And once you start bracing for impact, you make a decision and go a direction. Now, if you go the same direction as the other guy, shit's going down, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's the challenge. But, you know, cigarettes cause lung cancer. Mm-hmm. If you get involved in a certain extent, you're opting in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it puts you in a difficult position. Cigarettes are different from football because cigarettes aren't like the one way out of poverty for a lot of people, or the one way to create but it is the one way to create a community for certain people.
Right.
But at a certain point, this needs to be the kind of common knowledge as we qualify it, knowing that the official numbers aren't all the way in, but along the way, we make ourselves ready and make our decisions based on the information that we have. And the information that we have seems to imply that football's dangerous, mm-hmm. and it's extremely dangerous for former players or for people who end up having CTE.
Wow, you know a lot about this.
Impressive. I didn't study any of that going in. And that's the thing about being a football fan, is mm-hmm. you discover that you have opinions about things.
Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite fun facts about Brett, is that he knows a shit ton about football.
Yes. All right. Well, this is a good development in the medical field. So hopefully they do continue studying it and find a surefire way of identifying and diagnosing CTE while players are still living. Because who knows? There might be ways to mitigate it that go beyond what can be done during the game. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's, I don't know what that would be, but I'm just throwing it out there. The more we know, the better, you know, we can mitigate things. And remember, CTE is known to cause severe mood swings, suicidal thoughts, violent behavior. And so around the time that this CTE story broke, there were a lot of instances of NFL players who were caught up in domestic violence issues. And so, you know, is that playing a role? You know, of course, that's a possibility. And so mitigating the effects of CTE, preventing CTE is so important, not just for these players, but the people around them as well.
Yeah. So from some encouraging news from the world of science to some discouraging news from the medical field. Wow, there have been a record high number of cases of STDs in the United States, according to the CDC, in 2016. Yikes. In 2016, Americans were infected with more than 2 million new cases of gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia, the highest number of these sexually transmitted diseases ever reported, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Tuesday. The agency's annual sexually transmitted disease surveillance report shows that more than 1.6 million of the new cases were from chlamydia, and then 470,000 were from gonorrhea, and nearly 28,000 cases were for primary and secondary syphilis, the most infectious stages of the disease, according to the CDC. While all of these can be cured by antibiotics, many people go undiagnosed and untreated. Going on from that, I know it's bleak. It gets worse, Anna, I promise. The CDC estimates there are more than 20 million new cases of STDs in the United States each year. At least half occur in young people ages 15 to 24. So David Harvey, the executive director of the National Coalition of STD Directors, has said this is very preventable and he knows exactly what's going on. This is what he says. Several factors are fueling the STD epidemic. Funding cutbacks for prevention, education, and healthcare programs, an ongoing debate about sex education for young people, I know, with cutbacks in that arena, particularly from this administration, and the rise of social media dating apps have all contributed to the rise. Another reason that they cite is the lack of symptoms for these diseases and a failure of practitioners to educate their patients on what to look for. That there is a lot that is troubling here. I want to get y'all's reaction. But for me, I was very troubled by the fact that there are some practitioners who might not have the time or the resources or to educate their patients on what they need to look for. That's, I mean, You go to get healthcare, you expect healthcare.
Right. I mean, yes, that worries me. But I think what's even more important is that young people get the education that they need to prevent this. And so if you focus primarily on abstinence-only education, where you don't allow teachers or particular schools to teach about, birth control or STD prevention, well, then guess what's going to happen? STD rates are going to shoot up. Teen pregnancies will increase. And, you know, my favorite case study that I love to bring up whenever this type of debate happens is, you know, the comparison of Mississippi versus New Hampshire when it comes to teen pregnancies. Teen pregnancies are very high in Mississippi because they only allow abstinence-only sex education. Whereas in New Hampshire, which is a state that has one of the lowest rates in teen pregnancy, they only allow comprehensive sex ed, where they say, yeah, you know, you should probably avoid having casual sex and you should probably wait as long as possible. But in case you don't, let us give you the information necessary to protect yourself. Now, that not only prevents unwanted pregnancies, it also prevents the spread of STDs.
Well, and some of these, like syphilis in the 1940s, was considered a disease of the past. So how we have regressed as a nation is very alarming. And I absolutely agree with you. And I think that it always be the way that combat ignorance and outbreaks like this is through education, and there should be comprehensive sex education in the United States.
Oh, I totally agree. By the way, one other thing, I know that this study didn't mention HPV, mm-hmm. but did you guys know that men carry HPV and you can't diagnose mm-hmm. it in men? And by the way, it could have some devastating ramifications for men. There have been cases of, you know, penile cancer and throat cancer and stuff like that. So it's like really, really bad when you can't diagnose it ahead of time and treat it. But then also, if you don't diagnose it in men and they're going off having unprotected sex with women, they're spreading it to women. And guess what? You can diagnose it in women and it could lead to cervical cancer. So it's just, there's a lot of issues with this story. Mm-hmm. And it's devastating.
Ask your doctor about the HPV vaccine.
Yes.
For yourself, for your kids. Way to go, chlamydia. What an underdog story for chlamydia to be in the background. People forgot about it, and now 1.6 million new cases. Hats off to chlamydia. And you know why people get chlamydia? It's because they take their hats off, put a Jimmy hat on it, wear a rubber, don't get chlamydia. Silent killer. Syphilis, I will say, it was eradicated in 1940s, essentially. We moved past it. No, make America great again. Let's get back to the days of syphilis or chlamydia or whichever one that applied to.
Awful. Also,
What's wrong with that thing
that they address here that I think is important is reducing the stigma surrounding STDs and having conversations about sexually transmitted diseases and making that more accessible and people more open to engaging and talking about healthcare, even healthcare that might make you feel uncomfortable to talk about. It is so important.
We
need to erase that.
Did you have STD sex education in school?
Well, you know that I went to school in Belgium.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I mean. It's in Belgium. We're both from the Valley. We're born.
Yeah, no, we did. We had our sex ed was very comprehensive at my school, and it was a Christian school, a small Christian school in Waterloo, Belgium. So good for them, because it definitely could have swung the other way, like a small Christian international school. It could have been run by nuns. Yeah. Could have been the other way, but it was very comprehensive, almost too much so. I love Nurse Rollins. I still remember her because we were very familiar with how they have to clean a penis if things, you know, go wrong in that way. And
clean a penis?
And now I'm gay, so yep.
I remember I went to a Catholic school and we had sex ed classes. And I remember everyone got we had an assignment where we had to do a report, a poster with facts on each STD. And I remember the one for herpes, which was herpes HSV2, which was a little herpes virus with eyes that said a little conversation bubble. And it went, I latch onto your genitals and I never go away. Oh, I remember that. And it scared me away from sex for way longer than cool people get scared away from sex.
That was a little bit of misinformation. Like that, I mean, herpes can't be cured, but like that.
You can never get, it's an incurable disease.
It's an incurable disease, right?
Yeah, you can have a flare up that disappears.
That's,
Don't get me wrong, Anna, I know about it.
Anyway, look, this hasn't been
don't laugh at me. That's a stigma. That's the stigma.
I was laughing at your meant joke.
Okay, yeah, funny. I was laughing at your joke.
Funny man.
Just very quickly, I just wanted to mention this hasn't been investigated, but what I'm curious to see is whether or not the heroin epidemic might play a role in the spread of STDs as well, because sexually transmitted diseases don't necessarily have to be transmitted sexually, right? So who knows? I'd really like to see a study into that as well. So
yeah, if there's a correlation.
Yeah.
All right, we have time for last story?
Very quickly,
yes. Okay, well, this is pretty quick anyway. Hugh Hefner has passed away. He died on Wednesday at his home in the Playboy Mansion in the Holby Hills area of Los Angeles. He was 91. Here's a little bit about him. Hefner, the man, and Playboy, the brand, were inseparable. Both advertised themselves as emblems of the sexual revolution, an escape from American priggishness and wider social intolerance. Both were derided over the years as vulgar, as adolescent, as exploitative, and finally as anachronistic. I'll read that back. Both were derided over the years as vulgar, as adolescent, as exploitative, and finally as anachronistic. But Hefner was a stunning success from the moment he emerged in the early 1950s. He will be buried in Westwood Memorial Park in Los Angeles in a mausoleum drawer he had bought next to Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe really launched the publication of Playboy. He had purchased a nude photo of Marilyn Monroe, and he bought it for $500, and it is now an infamous photo known across the world. So what was your reaction to hearing about the passing of Hugh Hefner?
We talked about this on Pop Trigger, and you were absolutely right when you said it's like the end of an era. It's just like, you know, he was, and I like, he would always show up in stuff. He was the cameo king, you know, everything from episodes of Entourage to like Beverly Hills Cop. It was someone who did so many crazy things. There's one quote that I was like, in 1953, this is from the USA Today obituary. In 1953, a time when states could legally ban contraceptives, when the word pregnant was not allowed on I Love Lucy, Hefner published the first issue of Playboy featuring naked issues of Marilyn Monroe.
By the way, you mentioning I Love Lucy made me realize, you know, they wouldn't even show Lucy and Desi like in the same bed together. They were sleeping in separate beds. Like, that's how prudish the country was at that time. And so for someone like Hugh Hefner to come along and do what he did with Playboy, you know, it was risky, you know. I want to say ballsy, but I don't know if that's the right context. It was just risky, for me, the most memorable thing was when he talked about having sex with a man to experiment. He said that in an interview, and I thought that was so courageous.
Right.
Because, you know, he doesn't identify as gay, but, you know, when it comes to sexual experimentation, when it comes to women experimenting with same-sex relations, it's, you know, sexy and it's accepted. Men don't get that same type of social support. And for him to come out and say that he experimented and it wasn't really his thing, I thought it was pretty brave. And
Amir brought up a short story that they ran where they switched the prevalence of like homosexuality and heterosexuality, and it was the homosexuals that were stigmatizing the heterosexuals, and that gave people a perspective to see what if the shoe was on the other foot. And for all the talk about the idea that Hugh Hefner led to the objectification of women in culture, which is a good conversation to have, the fact that we have conversations like that is thanks to Playboy, who in a time when you couldn't say pregnant on TV, made it so that we were faced with these kinds of things.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what we talked about in Pop Trigger as well, where he had such an amazing life. He did so much. It doesn't mean that all of it was good, but when someone passes, I think it's okay to celebrate their achievements and then also have conversations about things that maybe we are critical of or that we do disagree with, because no one is here saying that Hugh Hefner was a perfect person, but I would hope that when someone passes, you give them that dignity of celebrating the good achievements that they had in their life.
Well, there are some that don't get that privilege.
And that's anyway, a discussion for another day.
That is a discussion for another day. We got to go. But if you're a member, check out our live members-only post game. And if you're not a member, just go to tytnetwork.com/join. Thank you so much for watching, guys. We will be back tomorrow. Love you and good night.